Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week we discuss the latest episode, Counterattack, and we listen to your voicemail.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Republic Forces Radio Network. We are here to talk about Counterattack, the second part of the Citadel trilogy. And joining me tonight are Jen.
Hello.
Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. Ready to disagree with Barrent on just about everything again?
And Barrent.
Hello, everybody. I've served with you many times, and I trust you, Rockstar.
Why, thank you, Barrent. I appreciate that very much.
Yes, sir.
Now we are here once again to talk about Counterattack, episode 19 of season 3. So right from the get-go, things get a little bit strange with our fortune cookie. Anything that can go wrong will.
I like the fact that they are now grabbing, you know, real-life phrases. Murphy's Law as applied to Star Wars. We're not even going for anything remotely creative now. We're grabbing stuff that is blatantly real world. That kind of shocked me. Although, maybe it's a tacit admission about the Mortis trilogy.
I actually thought it was okay. I thought it was kind of good setup for the episode because it's just like, oh, crap, they're screwed. Like, so it didn't bother me. I thought it was kind of funny because I could identify as like, oh, snap, it's Murphy's Law. They're in poo-doo.
I thought it was just kind of obvious. I mean, obviously, if this is going to go into three parts, everything that they're going to try to do is going to go wrong. So that really wasn't anything big or surprising. It was just kind of a confirmation. Yep, this is all going to go to crap.
It's the second part of a trilogy, but I think one of our voicemails points out the fact that has been pointed out on some forums as well, that this is one of the few times we've ever gotten a three-part episode where it really was essentially a three-part episode. It wasn't, here's a standalone story, here's a standalone, here's a standalone, but together they interweave and connect as a broader arc. Here really is a story that's literally, here's one, and then boom, to be continued, then boom, to be continued. So in a sense, if that's the case, this has to be the one where everything goes wrong, because not only is there another episode after this, which didn't necessarily mean anything in the context of this series before, now, with this being the second part of a trilogy, now it actually does mean something that there's a third part. This is the second act where everything has to go downhill. Previous to this, not really. A lot of times we got a second part that was nice and pat and wrapped itself up. We just had one or two dangling threads left for another one. We're finally into what really feels like a true trilogy of episodes as opposed to just a three-episode arc.
All right. We join Anakin's team, first of all, making their way to the rendezvous point. Anakin puts in a call to R2-D2 and his battle droids, who take the shuttle to go pick up Obi-Wan. We jump forward to Obi-Wan's team, who are climbing through the ventilation ducts of the Citadel, and after encountering a probe droid, we could see the first, well, almost see, our first brutal clone death of the episode.
Can I ask a question about these probe droids for a moment? A logic question? Because this has always been something about Star Wars that bothers me a little bit. These probe droids are supposed to be these advanced technological items that when they find information, they will alert their masters, whoever it is. Now, granted, in this episode, it might make sense that the shafts that they're crawling through might be shielded somehow, so transmissions won't get through. The probe droid has to escape from the shaft before it can provide the transmission back to Ossi Sobek. Okay, fine. But most of the time in Star Wars, it's, okay, you're spotted by a probe droid. Now let's chase it for 20 minutes and then destroy it before it can get off a transmission to whoever it was that sent it. Wouldn't it make a lot more sense that the moment one of these things got any type of trouble registered, that it would send out an immediate signal, perhaps a live feed of what's going on? It just seems like this whole Star Wars trope, not here in particular, but just in general, is kind of overdone to the point where these probe droids really are kind of useless. They'll gather your information, but they don't send it to you immediately, so bet on the enemy if they see it destroying it before it can ever punch it all out. It just seems weird to me. It didn't really bother me until I saw it in this episode, and then I realized, you know, this kind of is a repeating logic flaw in Star Wars. But then again, there's sound in space.
Well, once they see you, then they gotta go somewhere where they have Wi-Fi access, and then connect and upload. It just, these things take time, Nathan.
Can you hear me now? That's what the and like all the little like droid sounds and stuff. I guess that's more of a mouse droid than it is a probe droid, but the woo woo or whatever, maybe that's a droid for can you hear me now?
So our first clone is cut in half.
We also had one fall to his doom into the I guess this is a sulfur pit is what it's supposed to be, that yellow lava that's not really lava, it's like this liquid, I guess sulfur of some kind. We've got this whole trend in this episode of we're slowly picking them off, and of course the preview for next week says who will survive and then shows some more clones falling apparently to their doom. I'm wondering if this is one of those ones where the only clones that will survive happen to be Rex and Cody and maybe Fives, the ones that have been named and are action figure prone, because all the other ones seem to be essentially cannon fodder in this episode. They're all red shirts.
Yep, and as we saw with Echo, even named doesn't make you safe.
You know, called it, didn't we, Jen? We knew that they were going to be gone, right?
I'm a sad panda that they killed Echo, man. Like, that bummed me out. But they were getting really creative with the clone deaths in this episode. Like, cutting the guy in half, I'm surprised they showed that. And again, I think we even got a voicemail about this. They're getting really iffy on what age bracket they're targeting here, because if I had seen that as a kid, I'd probably be pretty freaked out. But and just the shooting him in the head, cold blood scene there, that was pretty scary. That's something that you don't see except in like kind of more intense like R-rated movies nowadays. So I was surprised they went that far. Echo's death kind of was bad, but we'll get to that. I was pretty shocked and actually a little bit impressed that they had the cojones, I guess, to execute, I guess is the word, clones in that way. It was pretty intense.
It was awesome. I loved it. What they're doing with these clone deaths and the way they're killing off these characters, these clone characters, is they're giving us our big Starfighters and they're giving us our Porkins. You know, they're giving us these warriors because the Jedis aren't the only great warriors here. You know, we're seeing these clones grow up from being training to fighting in these battles, and now they're dying. And it's those, you know, Echo is our Porkins, man. They're giving us these characters that we love, and they're killing them off. And I think that's brilliant because it's bringing me back. It's, you know, who's next?
I'm sure we'll get more into the death of Echo and such as we get further along into the episode here. So I'll save any comments on that. Although I will say that I got a couple quick perspectives on this whole age group thing. Number one, apparently you can cut people in half and you can shoot them in the head as long as Ventress doesn't kiss them first. You do that, it's over the line. Beyond that, though, I'm in the process right now of reading the third book in the Clone Wars Secret Missions series by Ryder Windham. It's a tie-in series that's still going at this point, as opposed to the adult novels, into the cartoon series. It follows this Chiss Jedi Padawan, Nuru Kanagawa. But the story aspects of it, the way they handle those books, the way Ryder Windham particularly handles those books, and the font size and what type of section in the bookstore you would tend to find it in, I think is maybe leading us in the direction of possibly finding out that maybe the target audience for this series isn't what we've been thinking. Maybe it's the place in the middle of the two we've been thinking. Because we keep thinking little kids or adult Star Wars fans. I'm wondering if they're just going for the teen audience here, which seems a weird audience when you think about Cartoon Network. But it seems much more like they're not willing to go quite as far as you would in an adult story. But at the same time, they're going well further than you would in a kid's story. Very much like those Secret Missions books and the way they handle it. And I would assume you would find those in, say, the teen section of a bookstore. Maybe I'm wrong about where it'd be categorized, but it certainly seems more of a teen target. Maybe that's what this series is meant to be, and we're just missing it because we keep trying to fall on either side of that middle ground.
No, Nathan, that does bring up a good point. I mean, if you think about where this show is aired, it's usually aired around Ben 10 and Generator Rex, and those kind of older kid, early to mid-teenager range, you know, before they get a car and go out looking for girls or boys, as the case may be. That's kind of the group that those two cartoons are aimed at. So maybe that is where this one is aimed. They're not quite the soft and cuddly kitty group where it's going to be upset them because the clone died, but leaning more towards adulthood in their interests and what they're able to handle in as far as intensity.
You know, it's also they're airing this in a time slot where they would frequently go through and advertise Tower Prep, which certainly is aimed towards teenagers, or maybe younger teenagers, but still teenagers. I've found a huge fan base at the school where I teach for Young Justice, which is what I find is usually played as a preview before any clips of Clone Wars you would see on the Cartoon Network website. So there's a lot of timing to add to this. The fact that it airs at 8:30, originally airing at 9, which is a little bit later than you usually see the children's programming. I mean, maybe that is what we're looking at. Plus the fact that, you know, what was our initial perspective character in this series? It was a 14-year-old girl. Now, granted, now she's probably, you know, 15, 16-ish, you know, depending on how far into the war we are. But assuming Ahsoka is still meant, at least in part, to be our perspective character, the one to bring us into the series, that's another nod in the teenage audience direction. It just seems weird to me that we would be thinking teenage, because it seems like Star Wars, oftentimes, it swings to those further extremes rather than teenage years. I don't usually think of teenagers watching cartoons, but apparently with Young Justice, I must be wrong.
But do you usually think of 30-somethings watching cartoons?
Only in their mama's basements, but still, it's Star Wars.
So shortly after our first brutal clone murder, O.C. Sobek gets a call from Dooku. You knew he was eventually going to call, because it's what he always does. He calls these guys over and over. This is why they can't really get anything done, because they always have to answer the phone when Dooku calls.
What was the deal here with this whole, I can't believe you made him wait kind of thing? Okay, the tactical droid, the Kobe Bryant tactical droid, right, goes and tells him, hey, Dooku's calling you. Okay, I better not keep him waiting. Oh, he's already waiting. Okay, so basically they put Dooku on hold. It's the hello? Oh, Aussie? One moment, I'll get him for you. And you sit down the phone for just a second, as opposed to just letting the call keep going in and ring, 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 ring until the person's ready to pick up. How is that something this character is supposed to be freaking out about? For this crazy mastermind, I run the Citadel character, him spazzing out about Dooku waiting a few seconds before he enters the room kind of has me thinking, are you kidding? You know what I mean? I mean, maybe he's just, you know, so intimidated by Dooku that that's his reaction, but it certainly seems to me that it partially undermines the ferocity of the character, as we've seen with him just locking everything down immediately when there's trouble and that sort of thing. I will say, though, that Dooku basically saying, you know, should I come in? Does this matter require my presence? Was an interesting touch, because he doesn't threaten to send any minions, because both of his most recent minions, Asajj and Savage, are out of his control at the moment, assuming these are airing chronologically, as Leland Chi said. It's a nice touch there. It's not really a Grievous-style mission, so having him say his presence just feeds into that, oh yeah, he still has those two minions out there running amok.
Well, you bring up Asajj and Savage Opress. Maybe word got out to Sobek that, you know, the last minion that screwed up kind of got put in a small shuttle, exploded. So I'd be a little bit nervous too if Dooku started calling and things weren't working out. I don't know.
What I did find interesting was that Anakin kind of finally called Ahsoka's bluff on the whole Master Plo sent me along. The way she worded it last in the episode 2 weeks ago was that, oh, I had a discussion with Master Plo after she said someone ordered her to send to go along. Not necessarily blatantly saying that Plo sent her along, but in that teenager way, telling enough half-truths to make a believable story.
Somebody had to help her, dude! Somebody had to help her! Otherwise, how'd she get frozen in Carmonite? Did she flirt with an Ugnaught? Ooh, what a nice piggy nose you have. How does she get into Carbonite if someone's not there to put her into it? I mean, all these other characters had to be put in and somebody had to flip a switch for it so that she could be added to the cargo. It seems as though there's something we're not learning. I'm hoping in the next episode we find out a little bit more whenever Plo finally joins the fight to save them.
I like that they brought up that it wasn't just Plo overriding Anakin's authority, though, because that kind of bothered me last week, the implication that Plo Koon could have been like, well, she can come anyway, and kind of totally undermine Anakin. I feel like that would have really kind of hurt the relationship and really upset Anakin. So I kind of like that it was her idea. She kind of sneaked in there. I don't know how, but it was her, not someone else kind of messing with Anakin even more.
It doesn't bother me so much the fact that, you know, she got on the plane or she got put in Carbonite because, you know, she can just go up to the Ugnaught and says, I'm a Jedi, you know, I need to go. And what do they know? You know, do Ugnaughts even talk? That wasn't the case for me, but I do like the fact that Ahsoka, they're delving deeper into this fact that Ahsoka does have the seeds of the dark side in her, that she doesn't mind lying. You know, the ends justify the means, and that's how she's been taught by Anakin, you know, and it was nice when she got called out on it. But I also found it nice that, you know, once she came up against the brick wall, she didn't complain about it. She just went ahead and took the charges. She blew the wall. She threw the charges at the droid. So, you know, she was quick thinking on her feet. She didn't let it get to her. You know, she's well trained. I liked the Batman and Robin-esque dynamic duo feel that Ahsoka and Anakin are starting to get now. You know, where it's not like Ahsoka is going to be the damsel in distress and have to be rescued all the time. You know, she's the one actually putting in work. And I think that this episode really showcased that for her.
Now she's sort of showing her maturity level in a lot of ways at this point, just in very subtle things like her stances, the tone of her voice, the look on her face in certain scenes are really doing a good job of conveying that. I happen to notice that right around the time they were first coming out of the fuel line. She has a stance that was a lot more athletic and Jedi-esque than what she would have had as a Padawan. She speaks with more conviction, more determination. She just gets up there and starts taking on the blasts that are coming at her. I think in a lot of ways they're maturing Ahsoka, but they're doing it in such subtle ways or in character interactions that we don't have to have some character turn to her and say, gee, you've all grown up, because that's what most cartoons would do. These folks at least have a little bit more panache to give it to us in a different way than we're probably used to from things geared maybe towards a younger audience.
Yes, Ahsoka's not our damsel in distress. Apparently, Obi-Wan is, because he has to be rescued by droids.
Can I ask you guys a question about the droids? Two questions about the droids. Number one, do they annoy the living crap out of the rest of you? Because to me, I mean, he comes out, he's like, that doesn't look like General Kenobi. We'll have to improvise. Shut up! Okay, do you not get that others, especially droids, will hear your inane chatter and give your plan away? Just shut up! It's like these droids are morons. Granted, they're a little bit smarter than the other battle droids we've seen, but every time we see them, even in the last episode, they're chattering about stuff that if anybody overheard them, the entire plan would be blown. It seems like they should be able to somehow transmit stuff to each other, or maybe even speak in R2-D2 beeps, instead of talking in such a way that would give them up. Speaking of the R2-D2 beeps, though, how cool would it have been if instead of the approach that they have taken, where they're just battle droids that follow R2, if R2 had been sort of like the puppet master, like the chess master behind the whole thing, and R2-D2 was literally controlling them? We finally would have got to hear R2-D2 speak, granted through the voice of one of the battle droids. We could have heard R2-D2's personality. How much of a missed opportunity was that?
That would have been interesting to see. I mean, we've all seen his personality and what he does, and we can kind of imagine what we think he's saying to C-3PO and others sometimes, but to actually get to see that and hear the words that R2-D2 would choose, that would have been interesting. But I just found it interesting that the battle droids work so much better for the Republic than they do for the Separatists.
I like the battle droids. I had the totally opposite reaction, Nathan.
Of course, we had to have a difference of opinion at least once this episode.
Once again, we clash heads. I love the droids. I loved how he was kicking around R2-D2. Because sometimes when R2-D2 is catching flashlights, I kind of want to kick him in the back of the canister also. Because I don't see how he can do that. But, you know, I like the fact that they were talking. And, you know, the battle droids are funny. You know, they're funny when they talk. And they are a little bit smarter when they were working for the Republic. But the one thing that I kept getting, which they don't really do here in this cartoon, is that I kept thinking that the battle droids were going to turn on R2 somehow. You know, you can reprogram them, but if something's inherently evil, it's always going to kind of go that way, you know, kind of like the scorpion and the frog story. So I was kind of thinking that maybe they were fooling R2, but it never came to be. But I like the droids. I like their color scheme. And, you know, I really got a kick at when they were kicking R2. I don't know. It's kind of sick of me, but.
Notice they were also more effective, at least initially, than Qui-Gon was in The Phantom Menace later in the episode. We're taking them to this place. Wait, there's not a base there. It's new. Okay, they're about to move along, before the transmission comes in and somehow the droid has to put his finger to his non-existent ear in order to hear the transmission. And then they're caught. As opposed to, I'm taking them to Coruscant. That doesn't compute. And that whole thing. These droids with R2 were significantly better than Qui-Gon Jinn was back in episode 1.
I can't stand the battle droids. They're like probably my least favorite. Every time they start talking, my head is in my hands just because I can't stand them. Usually my husband V can't stand them either, but he was on the floor almost rolling. He thought they were hilarious this week. I don't know what the difference was, but I still thought they were obnoxious, but he really liked them. So I guess it's funnier if R2's leading the posse or something. But, just to comment on what you said, Nathan, about R2 being able to hear him. Personally, I think that would be kind of neat, but at the same time, I don't know that anybody really should tread that territory, because that gets into the dangerous, you can't meet people's expectations. I don't think any type of personality they gave R2 could possibly meet what kind of idea of his personality people have in their heads. And I can see that almost being equivocal to like the Mandalorian backlash with people getting really upset. That's not how he should be. This is not right. I don't really know that that would be a good place to go. It would be neat, I think, to see. I would love to get a definitive answer to the question, but I feel like the fan backlash would be...
I totally agree with you, Jen. They're pushing it when he's catching communicators. And I think that would go into, you know, Greedo territory, or like you said, Mandalorian territory, where they shouldn't touch that. You know, we don't want to know what exactly, you know, because then they're going to give him a Russian accent or something, you know. And it won't be, I don't know if they'll be able to pull it off.
Now, even then, I mean, he still could have controlled them in the sense of not having them have independent personalities. That still would have made R2-D2 more of the heroic character in these episodes, as opposed to essentially being the one ordering them to do all the different things that they have to do in the episode. But I concede the point, you know, as far as him being able to speak. As you were talking there, the thing that it reminded me of was Chewbacca. You know, we don't ever get to hear Chewbacca generally speaking in English. But we wind up finding some books where we have it written in a very specific way so we can tell what it is Chewie is supposed to be saying. And of course, the way they explain it away with a Wookiee being able to speak basic in the Thrawn trilogy that really rankled people. One of the things very early on in the EU that rankled people was the fact that they said, well, the reason why he can speak basic, this other Wookiee, he has a speech impediment. Therefore, he's able to speak basic and no other Wookiees are. So I guess I can see that. I can see the not meeting expectations. They wouldn't want to tread that ground. But come on, how many times have they tread ground? They probably shouldn't have touched. I mean, Greedo in the episode where he did effectively nothing? It seems as though it's of all the things that they might hold sacred in Star Wars that they've already kind of ruffled some feathers with or shook the tree on, to mix some metaphors here. This is one of those things that, you know, I would expect them probably to do at some point. So I was surprised when that didn't become part of this episode or this series.
All right. Now, while all this is going on and Anakin's team is sneaking through the bowels of the Citadel and the fuel pipes, we are privy to some very interesting conversations between Anakin and Tarkin and Ahsoka for a little bit, where we find that some of Anakin and Tarkin's opinions actually are kind of close.
I thought this was great. I really liked seeing that because they left the last episode where it was kind of up in the air. Are they going to get along? Are they going to fight? Are they going to like each other? It didn't seem like they were going to get along very well because Tarkin was such an abrasive turd. But I liked it. I liked that they had this kind of parallel of thought because it was kind of hinting towards how things end up, how Vader ends up on his leash, I guess, later in the evolution of the story. I thought it was great.
I agree. I thought it was great. It gives us a foundation of how they can actually work together, you know, because the Vader we know is a very strong-minded, strong-willed person, and obviously Tarkin is a very strong-minded, strong-willed person, and what he believes is right is right. And it sets it up to where they could work together and how they could have separate goals that they need to meet for themselves. But,
you know, the thing about this for me in a lot of ways is at least it adds a little bit more humanity to Tarkin. Because last week, Tarkin was just a jerk all around. He didn't really seem to have much in the way of humanity unless his aspect of humanity was jerk personified. Here, at least, while he still really doesn't get much of a personality beyond jerk, the few times he is talking about those things, like admiring the Citadel for what it is, and boy, it's a shame it was in Separatist hands, not Republic hands, and that sort of thing. I thought that was kind of nice, the way that Anakin sort of agreed with it at that point, at least briefly. Then we get him talking later on about how the Jedi aren't willing to go far enough, and Anakin is agreeing with that, which certainly mirrors some of the stuff Anakin was saying back in Episode 2 and in some of the EU material. What I find interesting is that this really is sort of an evolving relationship, as Jen said, because eventually when you get to Episode 4, we're going to have those two working together, but there's that, for lack of a better term, like a rivalry almost between the two, like a begrudging respect, and they're willing to work together, but there's sort of that snippiness toward each other, at least on the surface. And shortly after Revenge of the Sith, we have this new comic series by Hayden Blackman that I referenced last time, Darth Vader and the Lost Command, where Tarkin's son, Geroch Tarkin, gets lost in what's called the Ghost Nebula, and instead of allowing Vader to continue hunting down Jedi, Vader is sent to go find Tarkin's son. And more to the point, it's in part because Vader has just tried to hunt down a Jedi, and his obsession with hunting the Jedi has caused the destruction of a base being used by the Empire that now they have to rebuild. And Tarkin is essentially snarky with him about how, I know about how what you did destroyed that base or caused that base to be destroyed, so be more careful this time and that sort of thing. It's this rivalry that I like. I'm not sure I like the idea that they're going to be totally eye to eye on anything, but to be able to see the same objective work together, even if they're both sort of jockeying for the Emperor's favor, I definitely like that, and I hope that they, if they do keep Tarkin in the series, that they'll build that up, as opposed to making it something that's just a quick flash in the pan here for these episodes and then gone again. And if I can add one quickie, because I wanted to ask a question stemming from last week. We had talked last week, and the question was raised a couple of times, why wouldn't the Jedi free all the other Jedi prisoners at the Citadel? It struck me while listening to last week's Republic Forces to sort of brush up on everything here. It struck me that if this was a place that was constructed in order to hold Jedi prisoners, and the Separatists got control of it, it would seem one of two things would have been the case. Either those Jedi who were already basically considered enemies of the Jedi Order would have joined the Separatists, or they're so dangerous, it doesn't really matter who's in charge of the prison, as long as those dangerous Jedi don't get out. They were sent there for a reason. So that would certainly make sense as to why Obi-Wan and Anakin and Evan Peele wouldn't want to necessarily free them. Unless they managed to destroy the Citadel on the way out, taking them with them, then we get back to Baron's point from last week about the whole destroying the Death Star without any thought to the other prisoners aboard. I was curious if that was something that seemed to fit with any of your reasoning when watching the episode or kind of reflecting on it from the second part here.
Well, I actually did have a thought on that, and I know I was one of the ones who asked the question last week, why not free the other Jedi prisoner, but I was thinking from the point of view that maybe other Jedi had been captured since the beginning of the Clone Wars, not the enemies that were already there since it was a Jedi prison. Someone had theorized maybe some of the Lost 20 or something of that nature were there. So I can totally see why they wouldn't want to let any of them go, but my question more stemmed from if anyone else had been captured. But apparently, from what we've seen, only Evan has been captured since the Clone War began. Everybody else has just been killed.
Well, you know, one thing that they did bring in this arc about how they keep Jedi captive is they torture them. And it seems that if you can torture Jedi with some sort of electricity, you know, whether it be a vibro staff or something, that seems to be how Cad Bane did it. And it seems to be how they're doing it here. And it kind of makes sense because when the dark side, when you're having dark side force lightning come after you, you know, it kind of immobilizes you. And so I like the fact that they're keeping the same theme of torture. In order to keep a Jedi down, you have to constantly torture them with electricity. So they can't think, so they're not able to use the Force to escape.
Isn't that a lot, though, like what you hear people saying, talking about looking at America's maximum security prisons and stuff like that? You know, if you leave us in here for X amount of time, do not let us out again, because we will be changed by being in these walls into something even worse than we ever were before we went to prison. You got a place for Jedi who are already apparently going too far and have to be locked up. So you're going to torture them and bring out the dark side in them even more while they're in there? Good luck if they ever do escape, because you've just created a worse monster than you put in the place.
So Obi-Wan and his team are captured, and we get our second brutal execution of a clone, where we see him cleverly behind another clone. You don't actually see the blaster bolt go through his helmet, but he slumps to the ground and you see smoke rising from his visor. Pretty brutal stuff. And before that, we got a very, very funny trading of lines between Obi-Wan and Osi Sobek, considering that they are voiced by the same person, which I thought was very amusing.
Which is also mirroring the bit with Grievous in Revenge of the Sith, right? With the whole not at all what I pictured, such a soft voice, or whatever it is he says here, goes back to the idea of, you know, General Grievous, you're shorter than I expected, and all that kind of stuff. It was a nice echo without having to repeat the lines. Over and over again, this series has tended to grab lines, and the novels are guilty of it too, grab lines out of the films and just use them verbatim as a nice little, ha, see, we remember the movies too! But in this case, they did something that echoed what we saw in episode 3 without having to actually use the exact wording. I thought that was very nice. It's a nice subtlety to the episode.
That was nice to see that Obi-Wan can still rip off a one-liner here and there, but it doesn't have to be the same one line over and over again. He's a pretty clever guy, apparently.
I will say, though, about the whole execution of the clone, and here I was going like slow motion, like, do you see a blaster wound in the helmet? Oh, dang it, I hit pause too soon. Dang it, I hit pause too late. Ah, forget it. So I didn't actually go through and screen capture that as I was wanting to. But one thing about that scene is it again plays into this whole we're aiming at teens and up type of thing. Because I don't know about you guys, and maybe it was because of just the standards, was it standards and practices type stuff for cartoons back in the day. But I can't remember any of the cartoons that I watched as a kid saying kill. I mean, I was rewatching the entire early 80s Transformers series a while back, and before that I rewatched the entire G.I. Joe series. It was always, destroy them, not kill them. And we get a lot of kills in the Clone Wars, especially this season. Is that something that's just, I mean, I know Arnie is more of the expert on this than I certainly am. I mean, was this something where they've changed what the standards are for mourning stuff or for kids' fare? So saying kill is fine now, or is this an indication that they're just willing to take it further?
Sadly, Arnie's not with us at this moment.
So none of you know either?
I don't know. I know that there is a stark difference. There is a point in time where it did go from destroy or defeat or crush them to kill them. You know, and it might be what stands out in my mind is the first time I remember seeing a cartoon character die was in the Warner Brothers Dark Knight cartoon series that started back mid-90s, was it? I think.
Well, what about Optimus Prime, though?
He was a robot. That doesn't count.
Well, I was going to say, what about Duke? But Duke's going to be A-okay.
Yeah. But, like, we really saw people actually die in that cartoon. And that was when, I think, kind of cartoons started to step it up a notch. You didn't have to see everybody get out of the plane with a parachute and be okay. It was okay to assume they were dead. And maybe mid-90s cartoons started stepping it up a little bit.
But now, was that just for American-made cartoons? Because I watched Robotech as a kid, and Robotech had constant deaths within that series. It was part of the drama of the series, was who was going to survive until later, because it was doing things that American cartoons tended not to do. But it was still aired among American cartoon fare. Is it that import cartoons didn't have to follow the same standards? That doesn't seem like that would make sense. I mean, it's the same airwaves. I know, I'm probably treading us down a completely tangential path. I'll leave that for I guess, forum discussion for those who are more informed than I am to address the issue. I find it intriguing that every step of the way this series seems to be getting darker and more mature, and it doesn't seem like people are having much of a reaction to it, except, you know, us discussing it and nitpicking it every week. It doesn't seem like the community as a whole are at all surprised by it. And I don't hear a lot of outcry from parents either about any of it or any of the brutality of anything here. It's just something I'm sociologically curious about.
No, maybe the escalation of cartoon violence is something we'll discuss in our season wrap-up.
Well, parents got Molly Cyrus to worry about. They're not worried about Star Wars. Star Wars is nice and safe, you know.
Speaking of kids, here's another question for you that I brought up last week. The issue of video games. This episode felt just like the previous one. In fact, perhaps even more so, like I was watching a Star Wars video game. Anakin hops on a staff, just like you have to do in Republic Heroes, so he commandeers it and such. They have to toss a thermal detonator, a grenade, to get behind the shields of the commando droids. They wind up having to hold a location for extraction before the next group arrives, and they're dealing with a turret that's trying to take them out in the process that they have to take out before everyone else can move through. I mean, maybe it's because I've been playing a lot of Killzone 2 and 3 recently, but it feels very, very video game-esque to me. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. It makes for some fun action sequences and gives us stuff that feels familiar, but not stuff we've necessarily seen in the Clone Wars all that much. But am I the only one feeling video game out of this trilogy so far?
You know, after you said it last week, I kind of tried to take note of that this week, and I noticed that a lot, too. It seems that this is the way that this trilogy is written is kind of video gamey. It's written kind of the way events proceed in a video game. So, I don't know, maybe are they setting us up, showing us what our mission goals are going to be in Republic Heroes 2?
I took this episode more to feel, it almost felt like a movie to me, because the beginnings and endings of the episodes have been so abrupt that it felt like this is one of the things that I felt should have had a little theatrical release more almost than like the original Clone Wars movie, because those felt really disjointed and really separate. And this one feels really coherent. So I didn't really get the video game vibe as much as this felt like something that was made all at once and then cut almost into pieces to fit the 30-minute episode bracket. But really, really quick, back to what you were saying, Nathan, about the standards and practices. I think there's a big discrepancy between people's reactions to violence as opposed to people's reactions to things like sexuality with young people. So I think people tend to, for some reason, be less sensitive to violence as opposed to, like Barrett was saying, Miley Cyrus with her stomach hanging out of her shirt. So, and I think also the FCC can be really arbitrary. So if they think it's kosher, then I guess they let it go. But it does seem very odd. I like that it's getting darker, though. I like that the series is not so cutesy and we're getting away from some of the Roger jokes as much as possible. So it seems that people seem to like it because they keep trending in that direction. So I'm happy to see it go that way. I hope it keeps up. And I really, really hope they don't start regressing back towards somewhat more kiddie, grievous, you know, stupid episodes.
I totally agree with you, Jen. I totally agree with you. And I think it would be a shame if they start regressing back to the kiddie, because look where we're going to. We're going to episode 3. You know, all of these events are supposed to lead up to episode 3. Anakin slaughters younglings in episode 3. So, I mean, you can't get any more graphic than that. So I like the fact that they're getting darker and darker and darker, because, you know, towards episode 3 is the darkest, arguably could be the darkest point in the Star Wars saga, you know, besides Empire Strikes Back. So I think it's a natural progression. I like the way it's going.
You know, and really, if you think back on it, I mean, this season, we had Supply Lines was this season, wasn't it? Early this season, where we had Jar Jar teamed up with Bail Organa. But even then, even in the use of the goofy characters like Jar Jar, he was handled in a much more, I'm not sure if mature is the right word for it, but certainly a much less slapsticky, goofy, groan-inducing fashion. He was handled in a way that actually sort of fit with the episode, and it had the humor and the comic relief, but it didn't go over the top. It seems this season is really sort of firing on all cylinders when it comes to this. We're going to mature it, not necessarily just in terms of the graphic violence and such, but especially just in terms of the way the characters are being handled. Ahsoka, Jar Jar being prime examples of that. Anakin's darkness being an example of that. Even the Mortis trilogy, which was an absolute freaking train wreck, still dealt with more mature themes than we're used to seeing previously. It tried to do a very mature, cerebral story with it. It just managed to screw it all up by the time it was done.
And speaking of things of a more serious nature, Obi-Wan and his team are escorted out, rescued by R2's droids. Everyone meets up on the landing platform. There's a fantastic battle, and Echo dies. This is a character that we were introduced to in season 1 as a rookie. Shiny. We saw half of his team decimated, and then the beginning of this season, we went back and saw them actually in training before they achieved the rank of actual clone troopers. And then we get to see them come back the second episode and achieve the rank of ARC trooper, and now he has lost his life in a really pathetic way, honestly. That was very disappointing that he kind of lost it in a yes, it all worked out because the explosion of the shuttle took out the commando droid on the turret, but really think that could have been pulled off a different way.
Oh, God, that bothered me so much. That left me, the first time I saw it, I was like, whoa. And I kind of caught that there was something off about it. And then I was rewatching the episode here in order to go through and, you know, take notes and everything. And it really was a bad ending for that character. Yes, he sacrifices himself, but not really. Like, you would think that he would be sacrificing himself so that they can escape. And what he was trying to do, he wasn't able to pull off. He wasn't able to somehow get over there and take out the turret by himself. Instead, he gets over there, gets blasted, because somehow, apparently, he thinks that that little shield is going to be able to take a blast from a turret, and it winds up blasting the ship behind him, their ship, that it would have been nice to have to escape with. It blows up, and a piece of it just happens to, through sheer dumb frickin' luck, slam into the turret and destroy it so everybody else can get by. The only thing he did was manage to make what would have been a pointless sacrifice into one that accidentally pays off. And for a character we have known for so long to die in that way, I think they meant for it to be something to sort of be really awesome and memorable and like, wow, that was really cool. You know, we even got that shot at the end right before they're walking off where Fives turns and he's the last one looking back toward the camera, like he's looking back towards the memory of Echo, and he turns around and walks away with them. It's really a bad execution of it, no pun intended. I mean, and it seems like they were really trying to go all out. You got the fact that he dies at the Citadel, and the training exercise they were going up against in Clone Cadets used the term Citadel. Now, I don't know if that was purposeful symmetry or just a coincidence in naming, but it seemed as though they were really trying to play off of that and really sort of make us feel it when he died. And yeah, I had that sort of emotional groin pull, as a friend of mine calls it, but not nearly as it would have been if he had actually succeeded and in the process of succeeding got himself killed instead of it being an accident. It was like there should have been this big explosive moment, and it sort of wound up being still explosive, but not nearly as much so. Just like when they managed to blow up an entire gas line and somehow it's a little explosion instead of blowing up the entire freaking base.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought of that scene. If he had managed to blow up the turret and then caught a piece of shrapnel in the back from the explosion or something like that, that would have been more of a, all right, too bad, not a what the crap. They just killed Echo just to get us by killing a named character. It's like, it seems like every story arc, they feel the need to kill a named character now.
I brought this up when they killed that separatist senator woman. I'm a big kind of, I prefer in media and stories and literature to have characters' deaths not be wasted. And I really felt like this death was kind of a waste, and it really bummed me out because he was a really interesting character. All of the two of them left were really interesting characters. We got to see them develop. They put all this time into the character, and then to have them just kind of swept off really in a very unsatisfying, mediocre death really bothered me because there wasn't even like a character benefit from it. Like, we didn't get anything out of Fives, really. It was just whoops, and he's dead. And it left a really sour note on the episode. And this kind of almost made me a little bit dislike the episode because it was so unsatisfying and it felt like such a waste. And like, why bother going through all this with the character? And I know, like I said before, in reality, crap happens and people die and it's horrible and you never see it coming, but this is not reality. This is literature. This is media. This is intended for entertainment. And I did not feel that they handled this very well. It was a death where you just go, oh, that sucks. And that was about it. So I really wish they had killed him in a better way, or at least had it mean something to one of the other characters so that it wasn't just this, well, he's crispy now.
You know, I'll at least give them the credit that they have one more episode that they can use to give us some emoting from, say, Fives or some other character about the fact that Echo has died. It's certainly, at least we saw him die on screen, as opposed to Mina Bonteri, who you were referencing, who just never winds up appearing again. They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, she's dead. And they just mention it and move on. I would say, though, that it's funny because, you know, you're right. In real life, you could have seen something like this. Somebody makes one of those fatal charges, and it winds up being that they wind up getting killed before they can complete the mission, and that's tragic. And yes, that shows the realities of war, but that's not what we were necessarily expecting here. It almost feels like if this was a live-action movie, you could almost think that this was a low-budget film, and something goes wrong with the stunt, and instead of the piece of shrapnel hitting him in the back, it winds up hitting the turret, and because they don't want to set the stunt up all over again, they're like, yeah, well, we'll keep it. We'll just alter the script to go along with it. It really felt clumsy. And I felt that emotional tug. But while I'm seeing that smoking helmet, I should be sitting there thinking, oh, God, I can't believe they just carried off that character. I mean, we kind of saw it coming, but this is a character I actually liked. Heck, I like Echo and Fives more than I like Rex and Cody. But at the same time, I've got that sort of weird churning in my gut, like something just didn't click with that. It took away some of the emotional punch. Hoping they'll address this in the visual commentary that Dave Filoni does now. I hope that Filoni directly addresses this instead of doing like he did last time and just going on some, or I guess with the Mortis trilogy, going off on the random tear about, by the way, we could have included Bane and Revan. I want to see something specifically focused to the sacrifice of Echo and why they handled it the way that he did.
I thought they handled it great. Again, I disagree. I thought they handled it great. I mean, it was realistic. It was stuff happens in war. You know, you make a wrong decision, you get blown up. And I brought up Porkins and I brought up Biggs. And, you know, and other people that have died in Return of the Jedi, you know, in the Rogue Squadron and stuff like that, you know, these characters who are these, you know, these soldiers. And I think that the way he died kind of goes with the way he got promoted to an ARC trooper also, because in what we know about ARC troopers is they were supposedly have been bred to be ARC troopers. And the way that Fives and Echo get to be ARC troopers is they survive the siege of their homeworld by the Separatists, and they kind of get promoted to ARC troopers. Well, maybe he wasn't ready to get promoted to be an ARC trooper. You know, maybe that inexperience and his breeding, you know, made this mistake and go over there and get blown up. But I thought his death was a lot more satisfying than, say, the Tordarian death that we got. You know, he got just kind of choked out by Savage. Or how about, you know, all the way back to Denal, where Cad Bane just kind of kills Denal out of nowhere. And, you know, that was a lot more pointless than I think that what Echo tried to do. He tried to be heroic. But I think that his lack of training and his lack of breeding was part of his demise, you know. And it makes me feel like now what, you know, it makes me like even Fives even a lot more, because isn't Fives the only one left? I mean, Heavy got it. I think Fives is the only one left out of the training clones, isn't he? Isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But see, big surprise. I gotta disagree on this one, because King Katunko's death served a story point, and it fit within the context of what was happening around it in the episode. Same thing with Denal. Denal's death served a story point and fit with the events around it. In this case, what we got was what felt like, in terms of the story context, you know, we gotta take it out. Here goes Echo with his shield that's been set up previously in the episode, being able to block at least some blaster fire, and he's racing forward with the shield, and you're expecting to do something heroic to actually take out that turret. He didn't take out the turret, though. The turret took itself out through dumb luck. To me, that's much less satisfying, because unless his death somehow causes major story repercussions in the third part of this trilogy, it felt like it was a death that A, didn't serve much of a story point, some, just to narrow down the numbers and such, but so far, no major story impact directly, and it didn't fit within the context, not just of the episode, but of that exact scene, of his intentions and what he was trying to do in the episode. Katunko and Denal, at least for their parts, served a better role. In fact, I would say that even though it was crappy the way they handled Mina Monteri, Mina Monteri's death has a bigger impact and fits better in the context of the story and her intentions versus other characters' intentions than even Echo's did here. Because at least when she died, it affected the use of her argumentation on the issue of the bill they were trying to pass, and or do they wind up, you know, talking to the Separatists or not. Even then, hers still fulfilled more of a purpose and seemed to have fit better. This was a guy who's trying to do something heroic, but let's face it, he didn't do it. He dies for a stupid reason, because, and I don't buy this whole, okay, well, you know, they just didn't have enough training. This guy's in training enough to be an ARC trooper. He is in training enough to get through all these other missions, and he doesn't know that if you pick up a shield that's used against, you know, individual blaster fire, that it's not going to be able to take a blast from a big old turret directly on it. He doesn't know. It just doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. I mean, granted, it's not like it hits it and deflects off of it and hits the shuttle behind him, but even then, running into that fire in the first place, not trying to dodge it, but instead trying to use the shield against it, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That's not bad training. That's stupidity. That's I'm bringing a water gun to a gunfight where everybody else has Uzis. That doesn't make logical sense. His death didn't work for me, which, of course, is a matter of opinion. I just happen to be very vociferous in that opinion.
Well, and I think, as we'll find soon, that is an opinion that is shared by many of our listeners from our voicemails. But before we get to that,
who is next? And I want to make a prediction. I'm making a prediction that Rex is going down. You've narrowed it down.
What about Fives?
They made the hint. No, I think Fives is going to, he's going to be a Mandalorian. I think that Fives is going to survive.
Wait,
is he smart enough? He was smart enough not to go out there with the shield, and he was actually trying to get Echo back, because he knew what a foolish move that was. But I think I'm making a prediction. Now, I've been wrong in the past, and I may be wrong again. But I think that Rex is going to get it in this one.
Oh, I'm totally not buying the Rex. I will put forth a different prediction that Fives will manage to survive. And there's always a chance that he might sacrifice himself and it'll be like, well, my buddy died too, so it's okay if I die here, kind of war movie stuff. I'm betting he's going to survive. But I would say that it's going to do that narrowing down process where the only characters who will survive are the characters who are named. So we'll have, of course, Tarkin and Anakin and Evan Peel and Obi-Wan and R2, et cetera, et cetera. But none of those unnamed, or as far as we know, unnamed troopers that are with them are going to survive it. We already see in the preview when they do the who will survive or whatever it is that he says, that a bunch of them are falling apparently to their doom, like what's his name did in the last one. So I'm going to make the argument that no one will survive within their group except the specifically named characters who are repeat appearances within the series. I'm not even sure that R2-D2's droids are going to make it out of this one.
I'm pretty sure that, yeah, next episode is going to be like the final bloody slaughter where like there's very few people make it out. They have a whole kind of train of little party there of unnamed. They all kind of look the same even. They're all in the same outfit, everything clone guys. And I'm pretty sure that none of them are walking away from this. I would really like to see Fives make it. Like, I really would prefer that he not jump in front of a bullet or on a grenade for somebody just to because he's upset over Echo's death. But I don't know if he's going to get out of here either. But I'm pretty sure Rex is going to be okay. And obviously Cody has to be okay.
Now, we're not the only ones with some strong opinions on what happened this week. We got several voicemails.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network guys. This is DeBeat calling in. I wanted to comment on this week's episode of Clone Wars Counterattack, which was so fantastic that I just had to call in and praise it. It had a lot of my absolute favorite thing in all of Star Wars, droids. I thought it was really cool to see the mouse droids this week. They didn't do anything, so it was exactly like the original movies, and that was great. And I'm always happy to see the commando droids. It looked like this time out it was some sort of elite model of commando droids. So I was a little bit disappointed that they seemed to be even less effective than they usually are. When they first showed up way back in Rookies, they were terrifying and they were like mowing people down. But now they're not quite as imposing as they used to be. They don't seem like they have any kind of defense against or understanding of how to cope with grenades, which is kind of sad. And I'm hoping that there's some kind of programming patch that can fix this bug so they can be more intimidating again, like in future episodes. I did think it was kind of cool, though, that the commando droids managed to kill Echo, which means that they have now killed every member of Domino Squad except for Fives. I think it would be a really neat plotline if Fives went for some kind of retribution against the commando droids, perhaps trying to destroy the factory that creates the commando droids or something, since we know there are no commando droids once we get to Revenge of the Sith. I don't know if that's the kind of thing that they would ever have in Clone Lines, but I think it would make for some compelling TV. But my absolute favorite part of this episode was Commander R2-D2. I thought that this was total must-see TV and the best use of R2-D2 in the whole Clone Wars series. I love the idea that R2's sentience allows him to use the battle droids like puppets that are superior to the regular battle droids, whereas battle droids are typically totally inept. These ones were like super intelligent. I thought the situational humor of R2's puppet droids outsmarting the other battle droids every single time was totally hilarious, and it's the only time I've ever liked the battle droids or thought they were funny in the entire series. I can't wait to get toys of R2's puppet droids. The mold already exists and it's an easy repaint, so I hope that Hasbro's not going to disappoint me here. I think we have an easy battle pack with R2 and his three special reprogrammed battle droids. Let's see. During the main battle scene of the episode, my wife was totally devastated about Echo being killed. Like, even after the episode was over, like, she had this discouraged, like, tragic look on her face that she was crushed about Echo dying. That didn't even bother me so much, but after I was like, John, like, it's not so bad that Echo is dead, but I think one of R2's reprogrammed droids got killed, too. I was pretty disturbed about that. Like, I'm very crushed, and I'm hoping that, like, they can find and rebuild, like, one of R2's soldiers so that he will still have his complete force. Anyway, great episode. Probably my favorite episode of all of Clone Wars so far. I don't know if Fives is going to survive or not, but I sure hope that some of R2's soldiers make it out alive. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the show and seeing the conclusion of the story next week. Thanks, guys. Bye.
He totally called you out, Jen.
And that really does happen. I was really bummed that that the Echo died. He's like, yeah, but I think one of the droids died. So I don't know. His priorities are a little squirrely, but yeah.
I'm curious about you guys' take on what he said about the commando being able to take out Echo, because it was a commando droid who was running the turret, as I recall, but it didn't seem like he shot Echo so much as he shot the ship while trying to shoot at Echo, and the ship just blew up and took him out. So do we think that the droid was actually aiming for the ship to take out Echo as he was that moving target, or was it that the commando droid was about as inept as Echo was and managed to shoot the ship instead and luckily took out Echo?
Well, I took it as Echo saw that the commando droid had taken the turret and surmised that he was going to try to blow the ship. So that's what led him to go for it. Why you would necessarily run towards a ship where you know someone's going to be shooting, that's a little confusing. Why not just run? If he's going to be shooting at the ship, why don't you run towards the turret? You might have more of a clear approach there. But
so we figured the commando was actually more on point because the commando didn't deviate to try to take down Echo when he saw him coming. He stayed focused. He stayed on target, and took out the ship instead.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I took that as like Echo did a very botched job of throwing himself on a grenade type deal, and I really wish they hadn't done it that way, but I don't think they were aiming for the... I don't think the commando droid was aiming for Echo. I think he's just a bad place to be.
You notice that whenever clones tend to die, or when a lot of characters die, we tend to have their helmets falling off. I mean, you know, why can't it be something else? Why not a boot? Why not a shoulder plate or something that's rolling across the ground? You know, even Jango Fett, when they cut his head off, his helmet rolls away empty because his head bounces out of the thing in Attack of the Clones. It's symbolic, but come on. You know, he got blowed up real good. How about something other than his helmet? How is it the helmet's the one thing that has enough force from the explosion to go flying off of his head? Ooh, unless we think his head was still in it.
Well, that's the prequel's thing, man. The prequel's thing is bouncing helmets. The original trilogy is severed right hands, or left hands. Which hand is it? Is it the right hand or the left hand?
It's right hand for Luke.
Isn't it right hand for the Wampa, and the right hand for Ponda Boba, and the right hand for Darth Vader, too? Doesn't everybody lose the same hand?
I suppose so, yeah.
I think everybody loses the same hand. Is George Lucas left-handed?
I hate you righties!
I did think that Dabeed had a good point there, or an interesting thought about Five's quest for vengeance being the destruction of the commando droid production facilities. So that would be an interesting story. Not something that I actually think they'd pursue, but that could be cool.
Or you could wind up finding that his quest for vengeance, if he takes a quest for vengeance on anything having to do with it, maybe even in this episode, could wind up leading to his demise, and instead of being the one who is the last survivor of his original group, he instead winds up being the one whose reaction or overreaction finally brings them to an end. This is the prequel era. This is when Lucas refers to it as a tragedy, not a space opera or mythology anymore.
Very true. Maybe we'll see something like that next week. All right. We ready for our next one?
Hi, this is Austin calling in with my review of this week's Clone Wars episode, Counterattack. And what a counterattack it was. I like and really, really dislike this episode, which I'll get into later. First off, I got to get out that this episode was overall very, very good. There are a few little tweaks that I didn't like, mostly with Tarkin and the Warden guy, and how they conversed with their different associative characters, but... And speaking of associative characters, R2 was okay, I guess, but that was one of the minor things. After watching this episode again, I really did not like that they killed off Five, one of the awesome... if that's a word, ARC troopers in the Republic. That's what I'm going to remember this episode for. I don't know if I want to keep watching Star Wars if they're going to kill off the most awesome characters that we have already established are awesome. Although it does lead me along the lines of what other characters have they created, and now those are in jeopardy too. And let me to think, Ahsoka versus Asajj. Asajj kills Ahsoka, then Anakin kills Asajj out of vengeance. More dark side stuff down there. Aside from the all epic death of Fives, the fight scenes in this were very, very good. I liked the... the Jedi that escaped, name escapes me. Evan Teal, there we go. I like his jumping around and his slicing of the droids. And Tarkin, he actually did not do too bad. He was more the philosophical element of this episode. And I guess the warden would provide the crazy with the crazy part with him choking a droid, which I don't know what good that would do since the droids all follow Count Dooku's orders in the first place. I guess we'll have to see. I kind of don't want to see the next episode of this arc because at the very last scene, before the end, you saw them all walking off through the caves and you saw Echo look back at the Citadel. I could sort of think what he was thinking would, like, I'm going to destroy this place. And if he's going to, like, do some hero sacrifice and destroy the Citadel, which is why we might not see it in EU books, and he's going to die, killing the clones is what drives me not to like Star Wars, and this might actually have me stop watching Star Wars. Although, if instead of sending in the cruisers and the fleets, like Master Plo said towards the end, they send in the Republic Commandos, which some caller voiced last week on the podcast, I would be okay with that, as long as they have some memorial to Fives and Echo in the, if not in material, at least in words at the temple or something. I have mixed feelings about the rest of the season, because we have a one-hour finale. But we'll see. Hope you guys talk about everything else. Bye.
He mentioned that it seems as though they're just creating these characters, then going back and trying to figure out, okay, well, which characters we created, so which characters can we kill off? And I got to be honest with you, this is something that's kind of almost like a trap that writers fall into when dealing with a pre-existing franchise. In the Wars novellas that I'm writing right now, I wrote the first one, and it's already out at IndiePlanet.com or Kindle. And I'm writing the second one right now, and I'm finding it's very hard because you're using pre-existing characters that already existed within the universe that was created by somebody else. So you're trying to give them depth and everything, but you know you can't kill them off because they show up in a story later on down the line. In the case of Star Wars, characters who may show up later on in the films. In the case of Wars, they show up in the game, so I can use them in this prequel to the game, but I've got to leave them alive. And you find that a lot of times you create background characters specifically almost as cannon fodder. I realized going back and looking at my first one that virtually every new character I created from scratch was meant to die or wind up in some horrible circumstance by the time that story was over with. Because I knew I didn't need them to still survive by the time of the game, but I had to make sure that the game's characters I was using, like Rogan Hallard, had to still survive by the end. So now as I'm writing the second book, I'm purposely trying to make sure that as I build up this cast of characters, I have ones that I know will survive or won't end up in such dire circumstances that are flavoring out the universe that could be used by other authors later on in our series, instead of it just being, oh, I created them, therefore I have the power to knock them off. But it is a thing that I've seen with Star Wars authors and really any licensed franchise. You wind up finding yourself in this situation where there are certain people who are hands-off. So if you want a dramatic moment with somebody else, you must create them. But then you often find yourself creating only characters that you build up so that they can have that type of painful payoff in the end. It's a real easy pitfall to run into when you're writing for something that has to use pre-existing characters for so much of the action.
Hey guys, this is Will. I'm just calling about the most recent Clone Wars episode, Counterattack. I just thought it was a very good episode, very good action. We finally got to see some major droids versus clone action. It was a really good story plot. And also, like, I just have to say, like, Echo dying, like, it was really depressing. I mean, he's been around since, like, season one, and, I mean, we got reintroduced to him in this season. It was just really depressing seeing him fall and, like, how, like, devastated Fives was. But all in all, I thought it was a really good episode. And, like, the thing that I really hope to see in the next episode is now that they're sending a fleet to rescue them, I really hope that, like, we get to see, like, a really large fleet battle. If that happens, I think this season will pretty much be good. But yeah, thanks, guys. See you.
I think we all can agree this was a really good episode. We all really enjoyed it, even though we've harped on a few little points here and there. But our biggest issue is Echo's death, not necessarily just that it was sad to see him go, but just the way it was handled.
This episode kind of reminds me of, just recently I've been assigning my AP World History students some of those heavy essays they have on the AP exams, and I want them to be excellent at writing these things. And I'm finding that sometimes I feel like I'm grading a little more nitpicky and being a little harder on the ones who are scoring very, very high as far as the comments that I make for them on their papers, specifically because I want them to take something that is really, really good, make it excellent, and just absolutely nail that thing. I think that's sort of the way that we feel about the Clone Wars. We get an episode like this one that's really solid. It was a good episode, but they have those few shortcomings in it or these things we could sort of joke about as we go along or nitpick, and we do that because we like to see absolute excellence coming out of this. We'd like to see this series hit an absolute perfect 10, as opposed to hitting a lot of 9s, 8.5s, and stuff like that. At least, that's how I feel about it. I don't think we have any bad juju about the series, except for, you know, the Mortis trilogy. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think we're all pretty much in agreement there. The only story arc that we've really just hated has been Mortis.
And Senate Spy.
Yeah, but that wasn't really an arc. That was just one episode. And Brent liked it.
It was the most awesome episode ever. When you see a Mortis trilogy, you'd be wishing for Senate Spy.
You know what? That's actually true. I really was.
Hi, guys. This is Dev from up in Seattle again. Get your blaster sound effects ready because I am a little irritated. I really wish this show would decide what audience it's being aimed for, because although as an older viewer of the show, I really appreciated the dramatic effect of killing a character like Echo that everybody knows. I mean, he's in the freaking Eye Catches from Cartoon Network, for crying out loud. And he got blowed up real good. And I just, I appreciate the dramatic. I really do. But I guarantee you, half a nation of young children went, "Is that me, Echo's dad?" I was going to call up and tell you about this wonderful new motivation technique. Apparently, I didn't know it was possible to throttle a droid, but... Ugh.
See, now, this is where this voicemail and the previous one, I believe it was, see things a little differently. The idea of choking a droid was ridiculous in one way because they were supposed to follow Dooku's orders. Here, it's a little more straightforward. It's ridiculous to choke a droid because, you know, they don't breathe. I think that's definitely something that was a little odd. They pulled off Sobek's characterization fairly well in this episode, but they also had that moment where what did you say? I mean, even Christopher Walken was sitting back going, "I don't talk like that, and I need more cowbell."
See, but I just take it as it's easy to beat up on a droid because you don't get in that much trouble for hurting them. It's kind of like the reason why you come home from your job and you play a nice violent shooter game, because you can't go open fire at work. It helps to kind of, you know, it's therapy. So you strangle a droid now and then. They don't die. They don't run and tell anybody. So it's okay. You've worked out your aggression.
Hello again. This is Josh calling to tell my thoughts on this week's episode, Counterattack. And I have to say, this was a really good episode. I really liked all the action. I liked the way they used Tarkin along with, I think his name was Evan Peel. I do have a couple questions, though. Number one is, how come Ahsoka never uses her second lightsaber? The only time I saw her use it was, I think, in Ghosts of Mortis, and ever since then, she's never used it. So I'm wondering, was that just, you know, one little thing just to add in there? Oh, look, Ahsoka has two lightsabers, and then, you know, not make her use it for the rest of the show. But that was just one minor complaint to the whole entire episode. I really liked it. But at the same time, I was really, really, really upset to see Echo go away. I mean, just by the way he died and stuff. You know, I'm afraid for Fives because, you know, they're probably going to take him out next. Also, I was also kind of afraid for Evan Peel, too. I thought, like, when they crashed, I almost thought he was dead for a second, but, yeah. Still, that was pretty disappointing to see Echo dead. Now, for another quick comment, is I think it's Sovek. I keep thinking, why can't Grievous be there in his place? We've seen Grievous so many times just run away, run away, run away. you know, Grievous is like, you know, the loser of the whole entire Clone Wars saga, but I thought, why don't we just add him in here, you know, make him win something for once. All the only times we see him win is in the newsreels. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, Sobek's an excellent character, but I would really like to see Grievous have some wins. But, yeah, overall, a really, really, really good episode. I'm definitely looking forward to next week's. However, I'm really not looking forward to a two-part season finale, since I already had it in my head that Savage Opress and Darth Maul were coming out in the finale. And I guess I have to wait how it will go out, but I don't know. I'm not as excited. But, yes, and that brings me to one other point that I was going to make about the preview on StarWars.com, the Chewbacca one, which is, I don't think, or at least someone like me, I don't really want all those original trilogy characters. I want the new characters. I want new characters that can die. I just wanted new Jedi. But every single time a new Jedi has come on, they've always died within the episode. Besides Ahsoka, I want someone with no background. They create it kind of like Fives and Echo, kind of like they do with the clones. That way, you almost have some suspense. Kind of like, you know, I don't have any suspense about Anakin when he's fighting Count Dooku. So, yeah, I just wanted to get that out there. Overall, just a really good episode, and can't wait for next week. All right, bye.
All right, let's see. First of all, I think the reason we've only seen Ahsoka light up her Shoto so far in Ghosts of Mortis is because that weapon's intended to be used against either two opponents or an opponent who has two lightsabers. So it actually shows a little bit of restraint that Ahsoka hasn't lit it up at every chance just to say, hey, I'm big and bad and I have two sabers.
Yeah, but when we saw the Shoto originally, the first time we ever saw it in Star Wars, if I remember correctly, was Duel with a Dark Lady. It was Luke versus Lumaya, where he needed it to go up against her light whip, with it being a lightsaber that's a little bit shorter. But granted, that was a similar instance where it was against a specific type of opponent, but we've got characters using two lightsabers elsewhere. We've got Exar Kun using them, and in fact, his was able to connect to make a Darth Maul-like staff well before Darth Maul existed as a concept. And you've got, of all people, Starkiller, who a lot of people keep comparing Ahsoka to because they both have that reverse lightsaber grip. He uses two lightsabers all the time, and it's not against a very specific opponent. So I would definitely say I agree with him that this is sort of a missed opportunity to not have the Shoto in play. As for Grievous, I don't know, having Grievous be the prison warden probably wouldn't have worked because it needed to be some type of prison warden, but we could have just as easily had a prison warden who was sort of a slouch in one form or another and had Grievous be the one to come in and take over now that Peele's there, or maybe be the one in charge of the interrogation or something. That it would maybe have been nice to give Grievous a win for once, because he's right. We usually only see the wins in the newsreels for Grievous. Just like we only see Jedi getting captured in newsreels, we only see Grievous winning in newsreels. And presumably some of those times must be the same. There's got to be an interesting story behind it. We just never get it. What, we can have dark episodes in terms of content and cutting clones in half with blade doors, but we can't have an episode that just ends on a downer type of note with a Jedi being beat up and captured by Grievous? He said he wants to see more new Jedi. I tell you what would be my perfect end of the series. I want to see a string of episodes that don't just lead us to Episode 3. I want them to parallel Episode 3. Give us some other Jedi with other clones and Ahsoka off on a mission that somehow interweaves with Revenge of the Sith without necessarily stepping on its toes. Stuff that could have been happening just off screen. So the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead is to Hamlet, or Tag and Bink stories are to the Star Wars films. Give us that for the Clone Wars. Don't stop it before we get to the film. Stop it, let it jump over the Tarnakovsky stuff, and give us something paralleling. But you would need people like new Jedi characters, like he's suggesting here. We'd have to have more perspective characters for something like that than just Ahsoka and Rex.
As far as seeing original trilogy characters versus prequel trilogy characters, I'm sure we'll get into that much deeper when we actually see the season finale and see where that leads. I don't think any of us actually expect to see the Darth Maul Savage Opress dynamic take place this season, or did we think they were possibly setting up for season four there.
I was hoping, but I wasn't expecting it.
So, yeah, that's probably something we'll see in season four. But I'm sure we'll get the fast-paced preview for season four that we usually get for the coming season at the end of the season finale.
Hello, Arnie. Hello, Jen, and everyone else at the Star Wars Action News Republic Forces Radio Network podcast. My name is Nick. I'm MC Nickel on the pod, on the forums. And I wanted to comment about last night's episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. I would love to comment about all the amazing, amazing effects that I've seen implemented in the last 2 years of the show, but it was all overshadowed by the death of Echo. I literally sat at my TV screen and screamed at it for half an hour. Not screamed at it, but whatever. It blew my mind. Why would they kill him off at this point? I mean, they could do so much with him. I could see using it as a marketing ploy, but this is actually one of the first characters in the show I'd become emotionally attached to. And to see him just, you know, blown up like that and look the image of his helmet being left on the ground like that, it messed with my head for a while. Anyways, thank you for letting me call you up like this. You guys rock. I listen to you every week religiously. Have a great day.
He raises the interesting point there, why kill Echo? Because, and I would say it's kind of like the whole why climb a mountain, because it's there. They needed someone for dramatic impact here, and Echo or Fives were the only ones who were really expendable out of the characters we had, other than those unnamed clones, which begs the question, should they perhaps be creating even more original characters who are essentially there to develop and possibly use as cannon fodder later, if we know that part of why they're creating them is to give us the possibility of them being cannon fodder later? I mean, here, not having more of those characters narrowed down the choices of who they could kill. We don't like to have characters just show up just to be killed, but isn't there something to be said that maybe they should be populating it more with those? Maybe our previous concerns about it were possibly out of place, and maybe more of those one-off or two-off characters would be necessary to at least give longer-running characters like Echo a chance at more survival?
Well, I think we're all pretty certain that most of the clones aren't going to make it out of this anyway, because, I mean, unless they all kind of get absorbed into the stormtroopers, but I'm pretty sure that they kind of establish the stormtroopers aren't clones by the time we get around to A New Hope period. So, like, I have never been under the impression that most of the clones are going to be okay. I think it was just the way Echo died was just a real bummer, because it was really unsatisfying, and people really liked the character so much. To see him go out in such a crummy way kind of bothered people, I think, more than the fact that he's dead.
I think it was just surprising, because so far, every episode that they've been in, the episode title says what's going to happen to them at the end. This one wasn't called Echo Dead. In Rookies, they were Rookies. In Cadets, they were Clone Cadets. In ARC Troopers, they became ARC Troopers. So, really, was it too much to ask for them to name it Dead
Echo?
Well,
they counterattacked, didn't they?
Well, that is true.
Hi, everyone. It's Robert Darth Akari calling in for my thoughts on the second part of our Citadel arc. Actually, I was very, very impressed with this episode. This is going to be one I'm going to probably watch multiple times. Not only was the action incredible, and I don't know what happened for this season, but boy, the people they got to choreograph fight sequences just heads and tails above, you know, what they've had in the previous season. I mean, there's just so many layers to the motion and the direction and the camera angles, just gorgeous. Really sad to see end of our friend Echo. Of course, there's a little voice in the back of my head saying, you know, much like in comic books, you know, well, you didn't see the body. We just saw his helmet on the ground. So there's a chance that we could get somewhat crispified, but still okay, Echo, but he's probably gone, which makes me kind of wonder about our friend Fives, if he's going to make it out of this one. I think one of my favorite moments of the episode actually was that little interchange between Tarkin and Anakin. I was really surprised to see they added in a part where you sort of have a meeting of the minds between the two of them, considering how much of a jerk Tarkin was in the first episode. He seemed to, I don't know if he's mellowing out or Anakin's kind of starting to show his true colors, but that was very nice to have that little moment there. One other thing, just because this is a recurring theme that's been going on pretty much since the Clone Wars movie, and I know we're going to have the Snickers about this one, but we've discovered one more character trait about Ahsoka. I think it's just been pounded into our heads throughout the entire run of her appearances. Don't take this the dirty way, but it's going to sound that way anyway. Ahsoka likes it on top. Let's take a look at her track record. In the Clone Wars movie, she stands on top of the AT-TE as it's going up the hill. In the Holocron heist episode, when we see Ahsoka riding on the top of the Juggernaut, the only time we've actually seen the turbo tank Juggernaut appear in episodes so far, but yeah, she did that there. When she's versus Slave One, she jumps on top of Slave One, slices off the wing. Here we are today in this with this week's episode. Instead of everyone else is going inside the tube, she's climbing on the outside, on top of the tube. When they're going next to the pipeline, she's running along on the top of the pipeline. Maybe she's trying to make up for her shortness, but it's always whenever the rest of the crew is going in one direction, she always has to find some way that she is the highest point. I'm kind of happy to see that General R2 is continuing to command his troops. It was some neat little moments there with them, although I'm not too sure how many droids he has left, but still, you know, it was kind of neat to see battle droids and clone troopers fighting together on the same side. But it seems like something that would actually make sense. You know, why wouldn't the Republic reprogram a few battle droids every once in a while? So, well, we'll see how this all wraps up. Looks like it's going to get pretty intense in this last episode, but always enjoying your show as well, and I'll call you in next week with my thoughts on that one. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Thank you, Robert. That was something that actually I had in my notes, too. It's a good thing that Spider Ahsoka came along, because in both of these episodes, she's been very acrobatic and jumping around, and just she's all over the place. She's like, she has too much energy. She can't sit still.
That's that Batman and Robin dynamic duo type quality that I was talking about. How you have Batman, who's kind of the muscle, and you kind of have Robin, who's kind of the bait. And it's kind of, that's kind of how it was with Ahsoka. She was kind of like at a higher plateau or kind of on the outside. So she was kind of like it was a lot more teamwork happening, I thought. And I didn't mind it at all. I thought that it actually fit. That's what a Padawan would do. You know, a Padawan would take point and kind of be the reconnaissance part of the team, you know. So that didn't bother me at all. I actually liked that a lot.
Hey, this is Glenn, Dooku on the forums, and I am calling once again about Star Wars The Clone Wars Counterattack. And I enjoyed this episode. I think there are two things about this episode that I didn't like. I'm going to start there, and then I'll go to the other things. The one thing is, in the newsreel or whatever it is, they say that they rescued Evan Peele, but they sort of have, to the point that they've gotten him out of confinement, but they still haven't escaped the prison. So not much of a rescue, because they're all technically still sort of stuck there. So I don't know, I would take sort of exception with that. Use of the word rescue, I don't know, implies more than it did or whatever. And then the second thing is, at the very end of the episode, when they report back, oh, we're in trouble, we're going to need a rescue, there are four Jedi Masters sitting around in the Jedi Temple, sort of like, waiting to hear from the report. So I don't know that, I think in the first episode we only saw Master Plo Koon, we may have seen Yoda. But I mean, we got, if you count Evan Peele, that's seven Masters, I guess the Council, you know, I guess that's six guys on the Council, plus Anakin, I guess he's not really a master, are sort of just sitting around during this sort of important time during the war. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like that's a lot of them to be having there at once. I think you might, in one of the novels, you know, it's not all this sort of like a communication, a Jedi that helps deal with the communication. It sort of make more sense for him to be there than to have, you know, Mace Windu, you know, twiddling his thumbs on Coruscant, you know. Should these guys be out leading somewhere? I mean, you know, Shaak Ti seems to be sort of stuck on Kamino, maybe, but, you know, I don't know. That bothered me. But the episode itself, I really liked. I liked how we're still, instead of this really being sort of a three-part arc, you know, there's sort of, you know, there's sort of three connected stories, this is really sort of one three-part episode, sort of, really. Like, I mean, hinted at that last week in my comment on the Citadel, but I think really this episode, too, it doesn't really end on an ending point. It's like, hey, we're still stuck, we need help. It's, you know, it's not a cliffhanger like you maybe want, but I think that they're really getting more into, you know, a full sort of longer story tale. That this would really, you know, work. You know, you cut out the newsreel that we had to be in this episode in the beginning of the second episode, and it would really play really well as a, you know, 61-minute, you know, direct, you know, video or whatever. There's no really sort of passage of time between, I don't know, well, maybe there will be some time, obviously, to get, you know, forces gathered to go out there. But then you're going to have, like, I don't know, six masters in one sector? I don't know. I'm not sort of looking forward to that. But this episode I really like. We had people dying, that, you know, sort of mortality. The story really made sense as a battle. And they didn't really win. They're losing. They're really sort of getting their butts kicked. And I like that. I mean, the only thing it sort of reminds me of is that I still didn't see Evan Peel get captured in the first place. But, you know, they mentioned that in last week's podcast, is, you know, every time the guy gets captured, we don't see it. We only just see the rescue mission. Well, why can't we see the mission where the guy gets captured? You know, that might be a little bit more interesting. But, you know, eventually maybe, I guess maybe I'll be here at season 4. But looking forward to the conclusion. Really like the touches of Tarkin saying, this is a really nice, you know, impressive facility. But I'm sure you guys will discuss that ad nauseum. So I guess back to discussing what I've just said.
I just figured that there were so many masters sitting around because they'd all used up their frequent flyer miles for that fiscal year. They got to sit around and they can't go anywhere until, you know, the new year starts. So that's all that is. Yoda doesn't fly much anyway.
He's got a point, because they kind of look scared. For them to being Jedi masters this episode, they were kind of confused and didn't know what to do. And Yoda was just kind of not really saying anything. And, you know, maybe he's got a point there that,
you know, I kind of took it as maybe there's a, you know, there, maybe there's a parallel to say, you know, what if General Patton had gotten captured or something? Would they have pulled together other generals to help get him back? But at the same time, you know, he does have the point that they're there on Coruscant while this is going on. I can see them having that many Jedi Masters in consultation about the mission, but they're there. They're not phoning it in via hologram here like we see with characters in Revenge of the Sith and the Jedi Council scenes. I mean, they're actually there on Coruscant, so unless they were called back for this emergency, it does seem odd that they'd be there, or that they're literally there on Coruscant not staging for a rescue. I mean, we know from the preview of next week, and we know based on just what they're talking about in this episode, that it's pretty likely we're going to see Plo leading some type of rescue mission in here to try to save everybody. Well, if that's what you're going to do, if you know that's coming, you think maybe you should be staging this on a ship somewhere in the vicinity? Maybe you don't have to go all the way from Coruscant to Lola Seyu to save these guys? It seems odd. There's just something odd about the way that scene is constructed. To his point about the whole rescue versus escape thing, though, it does make sense to say that they rescued even Peel, I think, and his officers, because now Peel's free to act in his own interest and escape the facility and the planet. Granted, the whole thing is semantics, but by definition, that would say that one has to escape entirely to be considered rescued, which would also mean that we would have to say that those who came voluntarily to get him, like Anakin, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, the clones, and so forth, they're now captives because they haven't fully escaped from the facility or the planet yet. It's semantics, though. But I do find one interesting point out of that semantic argument, because you'll note that Ossie Sobek refers to it as an attempted rescue, not a completed one, like the opening newsreel does. So you could kind of argue here that both sides, the Republic's newsreel narrator, assuming that is supposed to represent the Republic, and the Separatist prison warden, are both presenting the situation in the best semantic light for their particular side. Rescue complete, attempted rescue, both referring to the same events from a different, as Star Wars often says, point of view. I found that semantic argument kind of interesting once notified about it. I'm not sure about the whole let's not call it a rescue thing, but certainly when you hear Sobek say something that is slightly off from the newsreel narrator, and these are on two different sides, it begs a question of morale, of spin, so to speak.
All right. We want to thank everybody who called in this week. We do appreciate your voicemails and, of course, encourage you to call in and leave us a message for next week's episode, Citadel Rescue, which we did get a preview for in a very more people are going to die, release the hounds kind of way. For just that moment, I kind of saw Mr. Burns and O.C. Sobeck with the release the hounds.
I wanted to make a comment about that, but really quick, did Nathan, maybe you remember, did they say the name of those creatures that they were, because I swear they called them Anubis or something.
Yeah,
did you
guys catch that? They are called Anubas, and believe it or not, they're bringing them in from the expanded universe.
Oh.
The Anubas, well, they're from Tatooine, and we'll, I'm sure, talk about that next episode in Continuity Corner. But they're Anubas, A-N-O-O-B-A, and an S to make it plural.
The reason I was actually kind of intrigued by that, because I thought they called them Anubis, which, and the fact that the their character's name is Sobek, I thought that was kind of neat. Like maybe they were just raiding the Egyptian mythology drawer for names or something like that. But both Sobek and Anubis are Egyptian deities. I'm kind of anthropology nerd.
What is Sobek in Egypt? I know Anubis. What's Sobek?
Sobek is a crocodile god. I don't remember what he's the god of, but he's a crocodile. And so I didn't know if that was intentional or if they just happened to have a similar name. But this made me blink because, you know, there's these dog creatures and they sound very much like Anubis as well. So I don't know if that was intentional or just happens to be a coincidence, but I just thought that was kind of a cool little tidbit.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, looking at some of the pictures from the art, and I seem to remember this. Weren't those in the Creatures of Star Wars... It was like a coffee table book, wasn't it?
Yeah, The Wildlife of Star Wars, A Field Guide.
Yeah.
Interesting. They also play... Remember what we were talking about in the last episode? We made that reference to the... I think it was the last episode. It was two episodes ago. Somewhere around there, about the doppelganger thing with Dooku, because we were talking about, well, maybe Anakin doesn't actually escape from Mortis. Maybe it's a doppelganger of him and how he shouldn't make it more complicated than it was. That same game... where you would have had a doppelganger Dooku, is the game in which you wind up seeing these Anubas. It's the new droid army, one of the first portable Clone Wars games.
Cool. Nice to see them pulling in some EU elements from not necessarily places that you would expect.
Yeah,
all right.
They do appear in the art of Episode 1, though, so I got to wonder if perhaps this was something that was originally meant to show up in The Phantom Menace and got dropped. So maybe they're just reusing some previous... concept art here and just happen to go ahead and give it the name that it got whenever we saw it otherwise. Or maybe Lucas named it. I don't know. I'll have to look into that one.
Wait, they might be using unused Episode 1 concepts?
Yeah, I know. Like,
no.
Real? No way.
All right. I want to thank Jen, Barrent, and Nathan for joining me this evening to discuss Counterattack, and I want to thank everybody who called in. So many voicemails. Great to hear so many people enjoying the Clone Wars and enjoying listening to us ramble on about it. It's fabulous. I do want to invite everyone to come back next week and join us for a discussion of the conclusion to the Citadel trilogy with Citadel Rescue. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.